Good morning. You're listening to More Talk Radio. My name is Cecil Prescott.
I'm Celeste Carey.
And we welcome you on this Monday morning, March 28, 2011.
You're looking at me like you got doubts.
Well, I know it's Monday morning. I wasn't quite sure.
I know it's March.
It's March. Okay.
Okay, so. And between the two of us, we got 2011. Though I was thinking 2009 when you called it.
Oh.
Maybe we should look that day up in history.
Okay.
March 28, 2009. Okay, I'll look it up in a minute.
You do know what happened on March 28, 1979.
Tell us.
The U.S. had its greatest nuclear mishap.
Yes.
Yeah, Three Mile Island.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a subject for another day.
I don't like starting the day out on, like, you know, dismal course.
Okay.
We got to say something. You got to come up with something that's, like, more auspicious.
Okay, well, we'll find something before the end of the program. I know what's auspicious.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
And
90.7 here in the metro, 91.9 if you're in the Columbia River Gorge in the Willamette Valley, it's 100.7. On the web, it's kboo.fm. And you know what? We're your community connection. Hey, how about that?
That's excellent.
Yeah.
And as a community connection, we want to connect you with some community leaders here this morning.
Mm-hmm. Indeed, indeed, indeed. So I do have just a little bit of interesting prelude. In looking for something to say about our guest today and the reason we brought them on, I happened to stumble upon an older website. It's not older as in it existed back in 1970, whatever, but it was put up from a document that was written in that time. And it was part of the Black Labor Movement. And the interesting thing about it, it says, where are all of our young emerging leaders? And it was contrasting the labor movement at the time, which was in the late 60s, middle 70s, up to the late 70s, with the fact that a lot of young workers were opting to go to college and that you couldn't find anybody who was interested in stepping up and being an organizer because the pay was either not enough to justify the stress of the time on the seasoned workers, or all of the younger people were looking at different positions, and especially, as I mentioned, college. And so it was so interesting to see that comparison and that contrast because his fear was we're going to lose a whole generation of workers because they are being lured away by a false sense of achievement, like we've bottomed out. There's nothing else that can be done. And I thought, well, now there is a broad comparison, and that when we look at the labor movement now, there are a lot of things about it that would make a lot of young people say, well, I don't need that. It's not important to me. So not only will I not be concerned about entering a trade where a union might be relevant, I'm not even worried about entering into a union because I've either got everything I need or that's more work than I want or it's not relevant to my trade. Well, we found that that's not the case at all with shrinking wages, with an attack on the middle class. We find that it's really important for folks to think really broadly about how to organize the work environment so that you can maximize not only your productivity in terms of our national gross product, but in terms of personal satisfaction and a living wage. But how do you get young people interested in that? Because unions seem quite passe. They don't seem to resonate with them these days. What would make a union interesting to younger people? And so today, I thought it would be really interesting, having met younger people not only in my union but in union training, I found that there is a renewed interest nationwide in unions, and there's a sparked interest in young people. So to that end, I invited some members of young emerging labor unions to speak today about not only why they believe that it is still or even more so relevant to be involved in a union, but what unions have to offer people today of all ages. So thank you all, members of young emerging labor leaders. Yeah, for coming on down. And I'd like to first have the first person that I, well, actually, Mary, you would be the first person that I actually really met. But then, so then we'll go in that order. And I believe we're going to have Nick Cato join us by telephone.
Yes.
Okay, great. But first, if you would introduce yourself, Mary, and tell us a little bit about.
My name is Mary Protzman. I currently work for Oregon AFSCME Council 75 as a field organizer. However, you know, I wasn't always an organizer. I started out as a rank-and-file union member. I started out with the City of Portland in a couple of positions. I worked for BOEC for 911, and I worked as a desk clerk for the Portland Police.
Now, what is BOEC? Because a lot of people may not know that.
BOEC is the Bureau of Emergency Communications. So it's, you know, where you call when you, two answers when you call 911 or non-emergency. So my experience was coming into the workforce as somebody fresh out of college. I was used to this merit system, and I came to the table thinking that unions weren't really relevant in this country anymore. And when I started getting involved in my workplace and hearing some of the struggles that people were having, I began to understand, like, oh, wait a second, there's something broken. We still need to approach these things collectively. So that really got me involved, and I made it through a couple rounds of budget cuts and layoffs before I finally got the axe. And my union involvement up to that point had been increasing significantly, and so then I was able to apply for a position with the union, and serendipity let me get it.
I call it what is that Jefferson called? Luck, preparation meets opportunity.
It was basically that.
Well, welcome aboard, and then we're here with Allie.
Hi, my name is Allie Medeiros, and I'm a sheet metal apprentice with Sheet Metal Workers Local 16. I had always been interested in the labor movement. I grew up in a very pro-labor household, and when I decided to enter the trades, I knew I wanted to go union as opposed to an open shop. I've become very involved in my union. Recently, I was just elected president of our volunteer outreach committee, and I got involved with Yell last summer at our first conference in August, and I'm currently Yell's communications co-chair. I'm very excited about it.
Excellent. And also joining us is Nick Cato. Good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm actually doing excellent.
Excellent.
Right, good.
I see a little bit of sunshine popping up.
Hey, we live in Oregon. That's all we need. No, we're optimistic already.
So, Nick, tell us about how you became involved in the union movement.
So, actually, I'm a journeyman millwright. I went through an apprenticeship program in the Millwrights Local out of California. And I ended up moving up to Oregon and got on at a titanium mill in Albany, Oregon. I'm a member of USW 7150. I'm a rank-and-file member. I work in the mill. I ended up getting involved in my local and realized that I was the only young person, and we actually had a great door open for us last year. The AFL-CIO decided that they needed a young worker movement. The Oregon AFL-CIO went one step farther and actually put it in their constitution that they would create a group, which I was involved from the beginning in the planning stages, and then I was actually elected to represent them on the general board, and it's been amazing getting all of these young folks that have been looking for a way to actually get into the union, giving them that opportunity and training to become a local leader and be involved is awesome.
Great.
You know,
now,
someone asked me the other day about the job crisis. Does the job crisis affect you? And the answer was, of course, it's living on my couch. You know, everyone's brothers and sons and daughters are actually moving home because there is no jobs. And, you know, this is creating a great networking opportunity for people to find out about jobs and actually get involved and even help create jobs.
So one thing that I wanted to explain to people was how new Yale is and how many places, how many states actually have it. I think folks might be a little surprised. How new is Yale?
And tell us, what is Yale?
Yes.
Ali, perhaps?
I think Nick might be better equipped to answer that, actually.
Nick?
So Yale is the Young Emerging Labor Leaders.
Mm-hmm.
We actually had our first convention last August in 2010. Currently, there's probably just a handful of young worker groups across the nation. There's a pretty good one going in Baltimore and Minnesota. I actually just attended the first young worker meeting in Washington, D.C. 2 weeks ago. And so I guess there's probably about 8 different groups going right now, but there's probably 200 in the works.
And one of the things that I find really amazing is the fact that there are only 8. And while we're talking about what the young workers movement, the young emerging labor leaders effort is about, talk about a little bit what about the difficulties have been in trying to coordinate and organize nationwide with the young workers. Nick?
So with trying to organize, it's been really difficult because the young workers, especially in union shops, generally have the least amount of seniority. So we're on these weird shifts, weekend shifts, graveyard shifts, swing shifts, and actually trying to coordinate everyone together at one time has been very difficult.
As the young folks, we're also the first people to get laid off frequently. So, you know, it makes it really hard to maintain that membership to a union.
And then also, are there any regional challenges?
Definitely. I actually live in Albany, and the majority of our membership is actually in Portland, which I'm about an hour and some change south of Portland. So I think that in the last 6 months, I've driven to Portland more than in the last 5 years. but we're really getting a broad membership. If you look on our Yale Facebook page, we have members from Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C. to Alabama that are all looking at our Facebook page and actually trying to network. And even Mary the other day, she had a conversation with a steelworker from Pennsylvania. And that was really cool to actually get people around to be able to have a discussion with like-minded union folks.
You're listening to KBOO, More Talk Radio. We're speaking this morning with participants and of Yale, Young Emerging Labor Leaders, and we welcome your participation as we talk about the labor movement, its future, and where these emerging leaders think the movement is headed towards. And as we continue our conversation, we invite your conversation and your calls to share your thoughts on this very important issue this morning.
Phone number is 503-231-8187, and you join in and share your ideas, your thoughts, your concerns, not only about how the labor union movement, the labor movement, can benefit from young people, but what you see is challenges that might be facing them and how we can strengthen our workers' movement. One of the things that I wanted to talk about was some of the issues that young folks see as being very important that might be distinct from what some of the older workers perhaps do, and especially in terms of trying to overcome any of the challenges you have in working together. And for example, Allie and I took a class on communications and addressing leadership and communications issues within the union in critical times. And one of the challenges that we discussed was what it's like to be a young worker and you might not be affiliated to any particular party and having to address partisan politics and how that sometimes some of your brothers and sisters in the union have, well, what I'll call contradictory values. They may be supporting folks who don't support them. And do you find, like I said, what are some of the issues and challenges that you faced in trying to work together?
Well, I think one of the biggest issues is just recognizing that we all, no matter what our contradictory political views, that as workers and as union workers, that we need to see each other as the same, as working together for a common goal, and somehow be able to set our contradictory political views aside in favor of our collective working values. And I think it's difficult. I think for young people, I mean, the labor force, the unionized labor force is one of the last bastions where older workers are actually protected.
Yeah.
Because of the collective bargaining and the solidarity that rights that the unions have won over the years. But that also means that you're dealing with an older workforce that often feels disconnected from the young people coming in. And I think there's so much that we have in common, but it's often hard to meet together across the table.
I think it's also important to realize that regardless of party affiliation, that, you know, people can embody and embrace the values of a worker and the values of unions. And Oregon's actually done a really good job, for the most part, of finding representatives at different levels of governance, regardless of affiliation, that really do support workers' values. You know, like I said, it's a far cry from perfect, but, you know, we're obviously doing a lot better than places like Wisconsin.
And we do have callers who are holding, and so we'll come back to that question. Good morning. You're on the air. Good morning, Jackson.
Hey, how you doing this morning? Celeste?
Yes.
Hello, Cecil. Hello, Mary. Hello, Allie. Hello, Nick. Thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a union member. I belong to both the Boilermakers and the Pipefitters in Southern California.
Okay.
And I did my time in non-union for about 10 years. And it was during the heyday in our economy, mm-hmm. to where the unions were being outbidded by a lot of contracts by non-union. And mm-hmm. the only way a person can make their bones wasn't through the apprenticeship. Was what they had to do was they had to do their time in non-union with their experience first. And then once you put so many years into your trade, you were able to get in. And I had put in 10 years of the trade before I finally got in. And it woke me up to a lot of things as a result of the excess. And I think Celeste made a very good point. Now, as a result, when she first came on, she said that as a result of the economy going bad, now all of a sudden everyone wants to be in the unions, which is true. She made a very good point. And I think Mary or Allie pointed out that there was a disconnect. And I can tell you, I bumped into that disconnect head on because I had my own prejudices about the union. And they were all mainly good, by the way. A lot of the old guys that I was working with in non-union said, you know, we would not have the wages in non-union if it wasn't for union.
Yes, that's
you
true.
You could not dispute that. If it was not for the union, non-union would not have been getting paid. I did most of my bones on the East Coast, by the way. I had to come out to the West Coast for opportunity because unions have this issue of having closed shops. All right.
Now, explain what closed shops are for folks who are not familiar.
Okay. A closed shop is basically when you have your membership up and you have all your work that you can handle, or at least you've maxed out, and you basically aren't letting anyone into the apprenticeship, or you're not selling any books or letting anyone into, or books meaning membership into that union. And you're like saying, okay, that's it. We're not taking any more members in. That's it. Back East, it's pretty much locked in. And this is where you're talking about the older generation. These guys know they were sitting on a gold mine, and they were just keeping it quiet. There were times where when I was working in Franklin, Virginia, at paper mills, we would be working right next to the union. as a non-union. Non-union would take up 75% of the contracts, and maybe union would take on maybe 10%. We would be working right next to them. This is right to work state. All right? Now, once the union, who was getting paid, I want to say, $20 more an hour plus benefits, once they got laid off and finished their project, they could hop on over to non-union. Now, I noticed some interesting correlations as far as demographics when it comes up
well,
to...
Really briefly, Jackson, because we got other callers.
Yes, ma'am. I don't want to keep going. I know you have... At any rate, all I'm saying is that the union's going to have to go through, I want to say, a cleanup before they're able to compete against people like the Koch brothers. Because the Koch brothers are very... They're a lean, mean fighting machine. And I remember my union manager was telling all of his, all of the members when we were at the union meeting. He said, I know some of you guys vote Republican. I'm telling you, don't do it.
Okay. Right. Well, thanks for your call.
Look at what happened to Wisconsin. Have a good day.
All righty.
Well, one thing that Jackson mentioned was the need to meet the challenges of today. That unions in terms of the changing workforce and in terms of the changing condition. I think, Mary, you mentioned in passing what's happening in Wisconsin and some of the Midwest states. What are some of the unique challenges that union movement face now in this era?
Well, you know, I had mentioned this idea of a merit-based system. And I think a lot of people that are younger are indoctrinated into this system of, you know, merit is everything and it should decide how far you go on a job. And, you know, there's some validity to that. But also when you start looking at baby boomers and you start noticing a pattern of people that aren't protected by collective bargaining rights, and you start to notice that the people that are getting closer to retirement are being let go for no real reason, you know, there's something to be said about having seniority as a protection. And in unions, I know that's something that's been protected. We saw a couple teachers' unions on the East Coast sort of give away a piece of their seniority rights to stay alive. And, you know, it might not be a perfect system, but I haven't seen a better option yet. You know, that doesn't mean that there shouldn't be dialogue about other ways to address these sorts of things, you know, what the union can bring to the table to give members security. But, you know, especially with the baby boomers retiring, it's scary to watch people getting close to retirement starting to get let go.
I think so much of it is about education. I mean, people don't remember why we have seniority now. You know, why the unions fought so hard to win things like seniority and many other rights, and how hard those were fought for, and how if we're not careful, they're just going to go away, and we're going to have to fight all over to win them back. And I think so much of that is just about education and how to educate our members and get them interested. I don't think you receive the same education about labor in public school now as even, say, I did 20 years ago.
And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning. Good morning, Thomas.
Yes, good morning, folks. Wonderful program. It's great to hear the young emerging labor leaders on the program. And it's hopefully, I mean, now we see that the potential to really have the wind at their backs and to have people from, you know, young people that are college educated and people who have not gone to college to be open to the message of the necessity of labor. But, you know, unfortunately, I think we can look at organized labor in the U.S. really has, you know, there's a one set of real strong advantages that can be drawn upon, I think, and there's a real set of disadvantages, and the strong advantages, of course, are all of the victories that the labor union has won in the United States, and the huge role that labor, organized labor, has played in the creation of our society, of the equity to the extent that it does exist in our society. On the other hand, I think the huge liability for the labor union, right now are largely partly self-created, and that is we have 30 years of essential invisibility, 30 years of the biggest labor unions like AFL-CIO, UAW, others, of giveaways, you know, and excuse-making under the name of pragmatism, and we have a situation where we have, right now, a whole generation of young people who were incredibly empowered, invigorated, often voting for the first time for the Obama administration. And now, they, you know, as we've seen in the last congressional election, they just stay home because they know they have, now they have a finely tuned sense of BS and a sense of betrayal, and they know that the Obama administration has turned their back on them. And so what can labor really say? You know, is it enough to be able to point to the, you know, and say, well, we had these victories where 70 or 100 years ago, we were willing to strike, we were willing to get on that line? I don't think anything is going to speak to young people any more than action. They need to know about the victories of the past, but people need to see action. It's not enough for the big labor unions to continue backing up compliantly behind the Democratic leaders, giving incredible amounts of money to the Democratic Party, and all the time sitting back and watching as, you know, NAFTA and CAFTA and the Korean Free Trade Act, hammer blow after hammer blow to organized labor happens under Democratic presidents, and yet there's this captive situation where there's nowhere else to turn. So I think that the big labor unions and young leaders have to be able to tell the truth about what's really going on. They have to be able to stick their neck out and go beyond this 30 years of cozy, complacent compliance with employers, and be willing to have strikes, even if it costs a little bit. To be willing to have strikes,
I think it's a little bit bigger than that. I mean, yes, in 30 years, there's been a lull in the visibility of labor unions, but a lot of that was because of the successes. It was because, you know, the baby boomers were the dominant group in the workforce, and there was a lot of comfort. You know, they had what they had. They were good. They were moving along as a huge group of people. And over history, what the baby boomers have done is when they've come up against something that they don't like, they've collectively changed it. And, you know, it hasn't been exactly an organized effort, because if you're all coming from sort of a similar perspective as a generation, you don't really have to make the effort to organize around those. You have a similar perspective.
That's surely true, but then again, the fact remains is that the one fear of employers is work stoppage.
You've also got to remember, though, that in those
ancient. That is either on a small scale or largely ancient history for most people's awareness. It's not like France, where we have solidarity strikes, or we have giant labor rallies in England. And that is the line. What I'm saying is that there are massive strengths, there are truths right now that the labor movement can utilize, but it's going to have to stop playing this cynical game of we're going to make excuse. I mean, you take the Employee Free Choice Act, which across the board, pretty much organized labor says this is the one thing that we've really been pushing for politically over the last several years. The one thing. And you have Obama and the Obama administration turning their backs.
Okay, caller. So thank you so much for some challenging thoughts here. Let's let our guests kind of weigh in on that. Nick?
Nick,
are you still with us?
I am.
Yes. Were you able to follow that?
Somewhat. You know, Obama, I hear some Obama bashing, and he hasn't done everything. He did not push the Employee Free Trade Act through. But, I mean, he has stood up for organized labor as well as the other side. And really, in my opinion, unions are more than just going out and going on strike. And that is what the fear-monger of unions are, is that I'm going to have to go out and walk out with my brothers and sisters and lose my job. For me, a union is part of, like, the community, and that's what we're actually trying to do with Yell is show people and educate our members that we are the union. My neighbor is, my brother, my cousin, my friend, my family, everybody is part of this union. And we're trying to fight for our own jobs. It's unheard of now that a guy my age is able to go to a mill and actually retire there. Mm-hmm. Generally, we have layoffs and we switched jobs 6, 8, 10 times.
Right.
And so really, I mean, the education part to me is key, is to educate members and show them that we are out there being part of this community and that we need to be recognized and supported when our employers act foolish. You know, recently we did a Boy Scout event here in Albany, Oregon. We had IOTC came down, and steelworkers stepped up, and we actually did a career day with the Boy Scouts. We had 666 Boy Scouts come through, and they did hands-on welding. They learned knot tying, and it really showed the community, like, look, these young union members are here helping. And we had every kid in the building wearing a union sticker. We had parents that have lived here their whole life asking, I didn't know that all of these people are union. And, you know, I mean, you don't realize that the Safeway clerks, they're union. Mm-hmm. The police officers, the fire department, the mill workers, home care workers, we're all union, and we're all just trying to stick together and actually live a decent life.
Well, it occurred to me, Nick, as you were speaking and talking about educating the younger folks, the Boy Scouts, about unions, as opposed to, you know, 50 years ago when 40% of the workforce was organized labor, it has shrunk. What is it?
Considerably.
I mean,
at least 60%, isn't it?
I think so.
Yeah.
And so it seems as if we're at that place where, unlike maybe baby boomers, where unions were everywhere, and you knew union workers, that we need to re-educate why unions are important and why we need to organize. And I think, I sense that your generation is doing that very important work, very basic work in terms of organizing, explaining why a union movement is needed.
Yeah, I really agree with Nick, and I understand what the caller was saying about this striking. I mean, I think it's important that we keep our ability to do that, but I think it's important to understand that a strike only works if you have the public behind you, and that in order to maintain that public support, we need to do the type of education that Nick is talking about, of going out into the community and showing people what organized labor is really about. It's about making a better life for everyone. I mean, unions float all boats, and
I really just want to throw in one more thing too, about trying to organize the youth and trying to bring people in and appealing to the larger community. There's also this issue of, as we have the baby boomers retiring in droves in the next 5 to 8 years, how amazing would it be if those people that had worked all their lives or some of their lives with that union experience, if they could come back during their retirement and sort of help foster that movement and give some of the knowledge that they've collected over the years to some of these younger folks that are trying to make a life for themselves as well. You know, there's a huge amount of knowledge and value in that knowledge.
And really, that is where some of the benefit of not only retiring, but bringing back and reigniting the young people, that's where a lot of the benefit will be for their having been in the labor union all that time. It's what we call succession planning. We do have other callers online. Good morning. Thank you for holding.
Good morning, everyone.
How are you?
Hi.
Hi. After Clinton, Gore, and Obama, Biden, I have to say it really will break my heart if the unions continue to back the Democratic Party. I mean, there's Russ Feingold, there's Dennis Kucinich, there's Ralph Nader, there's a host of other candidates that can be run against both Republicans and Democrats in the next election. But the point of my call, though, was I wanted to address something like the propaganda that young people seem to be subjected to, and it's you know, the best propaganda is the kind of propaganda that, you know, isn't recognized as propaganda. And it seems like it starts in the high schools with guidance counselors. I'd like to know, you know, why don't guidance counselors say, hey, you know, you can grow up, learn a trade, and join a labor union? Instead, young people are taught to think only in terms of, like, individual career building, you know, like, what college am I going to get into? It's this whole mindset fostered by these personal finance authors like Jim Cramer and Susie Ormond. you know, it's all about, like, how can I build my 401k? You know, how can I plan my stock portfolio? You know, you've got the E-Trade baby out there making it look like my interests are identical with the interests of Wall Street. And so I'd like to know what the young labor organizers are doing in order to spread the idea of class consciousness, of working class consciousness, that, no, my interests are completely at odds with E-Trade and with being an upper-middle-class person or a wealthy person. They are, in fact, my class enemy. What are you guys doing to try and get the word out there to young people that really they need to have solidarity amongst themselves, especially as poor and working-class people?
Thank you.
Good question.
This is Allie, and I'm a sheet metal apprentice. And as a woman in the building trades, I just believe it's so important to educate young people that there are possibilities for satisfying, well-paying work that you don't have to go to college for. Not everyone was meant to go to college to become, you know, a knowledge worker. And I think it's so important to, I believe it's coming back. I mean, I think as young people are graduating from college and having trouble finding work, I think there is a renewed interest in the trades and in apprenticeship programs that we're starting to see. And it's important to include women and minorities in these trades. I mean, one thing about young workers coming up is that they're so much more diverse than the baby boomer.
Oh, that's exactly what I wanted to jump in and ask you. How do the young workers address those issues? Because, you know, for example, just sexism itself mm-hmm. was a big issue. And one of the things that really made a change in that was the fact that not that men saw their sisters coming in, but fathers saw their daughters coming in and realized what the challenges were and started supporting their daughters. Well, how do these young people now who don't necessarily see that overt sexism, how do they address stuff such as the elitism, the sexism, the racism? How do they address those? Because like the caller says, there's a propaganda that we may not even recognize as propaganda that's educating. How do you overcome that?
It's a tough road to hoe. I, as a woman in the building trades, like you said, you don't see that overt sexism anymore. And instead, what you experience is a much more covert form of sexism in the form of lack of training, et cetera.
It's very systemic, you know, all the way from being asked to sweep or unload a truck because it's easier and less technical than some of the other stuff that mm-hmm. I know Allie's shared those experiences with me. But even, you know, even at a meeting when you're the younger person in the room or you're one of the few women in the room and you're defaulted to, you might be better at taking notes. Why don't you take the notes? Because mm-hmm. I'm just a guy. You're better at that. It's this idea of a microaggression. It's like on one hand, you're not really sure if that was an insult. The other person didn't intend it that way. It's just so systemic that you're not conscientious of it. And, you know, especially when you get into these conversations of diversity and the discrepancies between the group of workers that are coming of age now and entering the workforce and the group of workers that are leaving the workforce, the only thing that I can think of is that there has to be honest, open, safe dialogue. And, you know, people have to not go on the defensive so quickly. You know, we just have to be open to listening to each other and just hearing each other.
So in other words, this is still a challenge, and what you're doing is just ongoing maintenance work.
There's no silver bullet for it, that's for
yeah.
sure.
So you're coming in and addressing the same problems that folks in the earlier generation did, mm-hmm. but with maybe a little bit more of a cushion, so to speak.
There's definitely a foundation that's been laid.
You're listening to More Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland. This is your opportunity to speak with young emerging leaders about issues that they see are relevant in today's labor climate. Join. We have a few more minutes. You can join in at 503-231-8187. And we'll go to our next caller. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning. I was wondering if the people in Yale are getting mentorship from older people in their unions. You touched on this a little bit with the need for retirees to be more involved. And is such mentorship relevant because there are so many unique challenges now? And likewise, are some of these older people in the unions learning from you? So I'll take my answer off the air.
Well, thank you for your call.
I think that mentorship probably varies greatly from trade to trade and type and duration. But I did want to say that Yale has talked a lot about setting up a mentor program. We're a very, very young organization. We're still getting our feet under us, but that is something we're definitely interested in pursuing.
I know AFSCME Council 75 has actually just recently rolled out sort of a structured mentorship program. So the idea was that it would be a reciprocal thing, that you know, the mentor and the mentee would both have something to learn from each other, because everybody brings something valuable to the table. And to address that idea of, is it relevant for retirees to come back? It's
always
relevant to have
always
the perspective of an older generation. I don't care what the topic. You know, like the Triangle Shirtwaist Fire, we just had the 100th anniversary last Friday. Yes. Honestly, I didn't know what it was until maybe a month ago. Wow. I missed that. You know, it wasn't something that was part of my education. And there's a lot of things, there's a lot of even just recent history about what happens with unions. Like, we had Union Night at the Ballet not too long ago, which was pretty awesome.
Awesome.
But, you know, it came to my attention from one of the members of Multnomah County that somebody in their membership meeting had said, oh, well, gosh, is that really okay that we're participating in this union night for the Oregon Ballet? Because didn't they, like, bust their musicians union? And wasn't there all of this drama around that? Is this really somebody that we want to support? And so I didn't want to derail the entire event for everybody, but I did check in with people when we got there. And it turns out that the gentleman from IATSE that organized it, or that had gotten the okay for the union night, had actually gone to the president of the musicians union and said, hey, we're thinking about doing this. How do you feel about it? To which he said, you know, obviously we still have issues with this employer, but, you know, we're okay. So
thank you. Nick, you want to weigh in on that?
Yeah, actually with the mentorship program, Yale is actually kind of developing that program. We actually have a couple of things in the works. The Labor Education Resource Center out of U of O is actually got some grant funding to set up some retirees to actually talk to young union members. And then the young union members are going to actually be making videos and telling the story of how the labor movement got started, which is awesome. I think Allie and Mary are both actually going to be part of that. And then we also are doing, I went to the executive board meeting for the AFL-CIO and presented the case that we were going to actually start a job shadow program where we're going to have union members, rank and file members, come in and actually shadow these gentlemen and find out what they actually do for the day. You know, everyone knows that the union guy is out and they assume that he's out having lunch and having a good old time, and they don't realize all of the meetings, arbitrations that are taking place.
Absolutely.
You know, next week we actually have a steelworker from my local is actually going to job shadow the business agent, and he's going to go to a couple of arbitrations and actually get his feet wet a little bit, and with the hopes that he comes back and he understands and he can kind of help educate the members here of what this guy is actually out there doing all day long. And also, a couple of callers ago, they were talking about educating the young workers, and I wanted to, you know, we're doing not just educating the young workers, but educating the community. And
yes,
like the Boy Scout event, we actually have a couple of things scheduled for May. In May, we're going to be doing a career day at Portland State University. And the hope is to get as many of our locals out there and actually come out and talk about what we do for a living. Talk about something besides actually going to college, and this is a route you can take. And then also coming up May 14th, Cascade Elementary School in Lebanon, Oregon is having a career day. And we're actually, I think I have Allie coming out with the sheet metal workers. Iron workers are going to be there, IBEW, steel workers, IOTC. And we're actually going to do hands-on training
for the entire city. They're expecting 3,000 people to show up.
Oh, that's fabulous.
And we're going to actually go out there, and we're going to weld. The iron workers are going to erect the building. IBEW is going to come out and do some electrical safety. I mean, so it's really great to actually get out there in the community and show people, not just tell them, but actually show them, look, this is what we do. We make sparks fly. And it's really cool. It's good to see the kids and the parents also smile and be kind of excited on what we do.
Great. We've got a couple of more callers here. Let's see if we can get to them before we're through. Good morning, Michael.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for having me on. I would like to make an observation and then to a problem that I see, and then what I see as a solution, if I may. I believe that we are all locked in and fighting the latest disaster that comes along that's presented to us, and we're constantly in a defensive mode, and we stay that way since the 70s. And what I see now is a nationwide battle for power, and it's between the wealthy. It's not Democrat or Republican. That's a mistake. I think that if we had corporate labels on all of the people who work in our government, we would see that some of them, like Kucinich, work for the people, and some of them, unfortunately, I believe Obama, work for corporations. They have their own agendas, mm-hmm. and that agenda is, I believe, a worldwide agenda. And if you just this morning on Amy Goodman's News Hour, you could hear this is a worldwide event that's occurring. I believe that these corporate structures are setting stages throughout the world in politics and economics to be able to show two things: disempower a power structure that is inherently against them economically when they try to empower their elected officials, being unions, and at the same time, these corporations, if they succeed, can also show that public institutions are failing and they need to be replaced with privatized institutions, from public to privatized prisons and so on. It's occurring nationwide.
Right.
And then with the prisons, if they can't fill the prisons, then they have to start passing laws
to criminalize non-criminal behavior, right.
Put people in there. And the laws that are being passed, if you notice, are affecting people who are mostly tame, like and also would succeed, like sex offenders or alcoholics or marijuana users or whatever they can fill prisons with, so they can hire a security guard instead of a trained prison guard. That's a sidebar. I see this as a worldwide battle. We're focusing on a nationwide. I think that if we were to do something to connect with the entire world's unions and look at this as a worldwide battle, we would have more success. And at the same time, if we were to just this discussion about generational disinformation and not even knowing about the shirt fire
incident,
There seems to be this classic disconnect between generations, and this kind of information seems to get continually lost until some group gets defensive. If we were all to join together, like in the 60s, where women, blacks, white...
Caller, we're running out of time, and we'd like for them to be able to respond.
Here's the point that I would like
caller,
to make.
We'd like for them to be able to respond to what you said, and that's plenty. Thank you so much for giving us a lot just to chew on, and we'll let our guests respond.
Well, I think that is exactly what Yale is trying to do, is to bring the young workers together, and we'd really love to see more rank-and-file members coming to our social hours. You could check us out on Facebook. Mm-hmm. It's Young Emerging Labor Leaders.
You also have a rally coming up. And to the caller, we also have an international rally coming up this weekend, which I hope to participate in. So if you could just briefly just talk about the fact that you are trying to connect the dots, as he said, in about 30 seconds.
Yes, there's a rally at the U.S.-Canadian border on April 2nd, which is very exciting. I hope to be there as well. And, I mean, talk about solidarity.
They were meeting at 2 o'clock at Peace Arch.
Yes, that's correct. And the Oregon AFL-CIO has a bus going up there. You do not have to drive yourself. It's leaving at 7 a.m. They will be providing breakfast and lunch, and the cost is $30 for transportation.
I just want to say that if you're in a union, even if you're not an active member, you might want to give it a try.
Right. And then we've got one more caller. We've only got about 1 minute. Joe, really quickly.
Yes. Allie talked about being in her volunteer outreach committee. I wanted to ask about, you know, because there's so many non-union places that have younger workers, how do you recruit younger workers? What's the message that appeals to them?
Thank you. Good question.
Well, I think younger workers just want to be included and involved. For instance, IBEW has a women and minority caucus, which I think is fantastic. I think the way you recruit people is to make them feel welcome and to create a space for them to pursue what they want to pursue in an environment that's friendly.
Excellent. And April 4th is a rally going on.
April 4th is a rally going on. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
It's the Keep Dr. Martin Luther King's Dream Alive rally. It's happening in downtown Portland. Unfortunately, I've forgotten the exact location. Nick might have it. But that's on April 4th. I believe it's at 5:30 p.m.
Nick?
So what we're actually doing is it's a nationwide rally. And we're doing it to celebrate in remembrance of Martin Luther King. And we are doing actions across the country. We are meeting the young emerging labor leaders, actually having a social hour. We're going to meet at the Lucky Lab Brewery in Portland on Hawthorne at 4:30. And at 5:30, we're going to go ahead and take the walk over the bridge. And we're going to meet and have a solidarity rally, which would be amazing. Anybody in Portland, I would hope that you could come down to the Lucky Lab and have a couple of drinks, and then we will go and stand with all the other workers.
And just so folks know, you can actually bring your kids to the Lucky Lab, too. So this is a family-friendly sort of thing.
Yes.
And dogs.
Good call.
And the good thing about this is that this is an opportunity to connect with people all across the nation in doing so. You can find out more about Yale on their Facebook page, Young Emerging Leaders.
Labor Leaders.
Yes. And what's coming up next?
Omo Variety Hour, talking about many things, including availability of alternative energy. People from Wisconsin talks about what's happening there. And music with radical musicologist Brad Duncan. 10 is Air Cascadia. At 10:15, locust focused farmer and sustainable food activist Fred Kirchenman discusses building community. At 11, Sound of Awareness, the topic is Washington State School of the Blind. 11:30, Sue Supriano speaks with social activist and visionary Daniel Pinchbeck about radical politics and ecological alternatives. Thanks, Cable members, for your support. If you're not a member, you can become one by going to KBOO-FM and clicking on the tip jar. This has been More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil.
I'm Celeste, and Cable listeners, unite. And everybody else who's in a union, unite. And those who are not, just think about it. Don't you deserve more out of life? We'll hear you next week.